You're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I'm your host this week, Ann Nicholson Weber, and I'm here talking to three representatives of the Chicago Children's Theater scene. We have Tom Arvidas from Vidim Theater, Francis Limoncelli from Lifeline, and Andrew Lines from Tire Swing Theater. And I'm going to ask each of them to just quickly introduce themselves and explain what they do. Tom?
Well, I'm the producing artistic director at the Vidim. I've been there for 4 years. We've been producing a family series for this will be our third year. It's part of the Northwestern University Settlement House, which has been in Westtown since 1891. The theater's been open since 1998. So, relatively speaking, the season for young audiences is pretty young, but has grown quite rapidly.
Great. Francis?
Well, I'm from Lifeline Theater in Chicago's Rogers Park, and we don't exclusively produce children's theater. We do 6 plays a year, mostly original adaptations. 3 of them are for adults, and 3 of them are our kids series aimed at ages 5 to 8 and their parents. I'm the director of marketing for Lifeline Theater and also the education outreach coordinator, and I've acted, adapted, and directed children's plays at Lifeline.
And Andrew?
I'm with Tire Swing Theater. I'm a co-founder. I'm a writer, a director, and sometimes actor in our wonderful family-oriented productions. We've been around for 4 years. We do 2 main stage shows and 1 touring show. We do not have our own space, so you can find us at various theaters around Chicagoland.
Great. Well, one thing that's a kind of obvious place to start is differences between children's theater and adult theater. And maybe speaking artistically, I imagine that your reasons for being in children's theater might be different and your goals as theater artists in children's theater might be different. So Francis is nodding. Maybe you've got something to say.
Sure. Well, I am very opinionated on this issue because I really believe I believe you always have to consider your audience. Every play, you're going to be thinking about the person who is watching it and how they feel about it and whether they will understand everything. But we try at Lifeline to bring exactly the same artistic sensibility to the kids series shows that we do to our main stage shows. We've been producing, this is our 24th season, and we've been doing kids series for 20 of those 24 years. And I think our hallmark is, and I think that we are probably all 3 of our companies probably feel exactly the same way, to not talk down to the kids and to talk on a peer level with them, to not mug or ham or cartoon things up because it's insulting to children's intelligence. I do think that often we have actors who might come from a children's theater background that is more in that extreme cartoony kind of land. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a process of getting them to understand that really what we believe is sincerity and commitment is even more important for children's theater than it is for grown-ups. Kids can call you on anything fake.
Yeah.
I think they have, you know, a fantastic barometer for that internally. And you know that show business saying, you know, acting is all about sincerity, and if you can fake that, you've got it made. But I do think really that that you have to be real for kids. It might be difficult because your characters in children's theater might be huge. You might be playing an animal or a robot or a dinosaur. But you have to do it honestly, or the kids will call you on it. Mm-hmm.
I like to think about the works that we do as being bolder colors than you'll find in some adult theater. You're not going to get into the complexities that you would in some adult theater. But that doesn't mean that your actors aren't working harder. In fact, some of the actors have had some people have a hard transition making that adjustment from adult to family-oriented productions, and just like the things you're speaking of, the level of commitment and the ability to put down that fourth wall and really connect and engage your audience. It can be very difficult for some actors who prefer just acting in a box and not having to worry about that. There is almost like a sixth man element when you're dealing with your audience that can really make or break your show.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, if you're losing your audience in an adult show, it's too bad and you feel it. But if you're losing your audience with children, it kind of wrecks the whole thing. I
mean, well, you know immediately.
Right.
We serve our series grew out of our relationship with Chicago Public Schools, and we now serve about 15,000 Chicago Public School kids a year with our season, and a majority of them, it's their first experience with live theater. So you were talking about how they might respond vocally, or we actually, because our venue is we're very lucky to have the space that we do. It's a 300 seat venue. It's rather elegant. We really take it upon ourselves to introduce the idea of attending theater to our kids. So part of the experience is coming in and being oriented to the space and sort of telling them what our expectations are of them as audience members. Of course, again, trying to do it in a way that's not condescending, that also translates to the types of shows that we choose as well.
So you're suggesting that by having a big and kind of glorious-looking space, it makes them take it seriously and think about how they behave. Is that where you were going with that?
Absolutely, yeah. And the other the added sort of level to that is because they're field trips, they're often not the ones choosing to come to the space. Mm-hmm. The same thing you're dealing with sometimes with families, although it's less so, I think, because families communicate hopefully a lot more than maybe teachers and their students. We're working with teachers mostly in the planning of these trips. So when the kids get there, they often don't, have a choice, and we want to make sure that they leave with a really positive experience, and they don't come in the door and then tune out. Mm-hmm.
I really admire your efforts in that direction. Both of you, I know, serve that audience, and we do occasionally with our family main stages. But I know from teaching that age group is hard to win over. They may come in with resistance or, an idea that they're too cool for whatever it is you have to offer. And so I think what you're doing is absolutely so important. I just love what you're talking about. For us, I just love the fact that our younger age group, they're just so delighted. They mm-hmm. just so want to have a great time, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I feel a responsibility. I think that occasionally children's theater gets a bad reputation because people might exploit that desire for children to enjoy themselves and have mm-hmm. fun and give them something that's subpar. So I think that in a lot of ways we have an easier job. We're dealing with wonder and delight that's natural for the younger children, but it's a responsibility. We feel absolutely that they deserve our best, our mm-hmm. absolute best. Mm-hmm. And we want our kids to grow up and go to your shows say, oh, I love theater. I already know what this is going to be about.
Yeah, we're creating tomorrow's audiences, know.
Adding on to what was just said, mm-hmm. As far as the children enjoying the shows that we do, we don't have any problem with children enjoying the shows. Mm-hmm. Our problems lie with the adults. And often I find that our older audience members have a harder time relaxing and just letting themselves be won over by the show mm-hmm. than the younger. I have no problems when you have someone under the age of 20 come in. I know they're going to enjoy it. I just know that they are. And they're going to react however they're going to react. But I always find that the adults are a lot more reserved. And the parts where they could be there, because that's half our audience. You do, as a children's theater, you have to survive by doing school matinees. It's a moneymaker, mm-hmm. hands down. And when you have a very nice large space like the Vidim or Mercury or some of the other spaces here in the city, it's really easy to get the schools in, and you get them in, you get them out, everyone's happy, and you get paid right away. But as far as regular performances, 8 p.m. performances, you're dealing with families. When you're dealing with families, you're not just dealing with the kids, you're also dealing with the adults. So we've been trying really hard to do all-age productions where mm-hmm. Everybody enjoys and everyone has a wonderful time, and we feel it's very rewarding for entire families mm-hmm. To like your shows. And you notice the big media movies that have been very successful, the Shreks and even the Wickeds or this, that, and the other. It's because the entire family has enjoyed going to see the show.
It seems to me there are two different ways you can do that. And one is kind of what I think of as the Sesame Street model, where there will be these jokes that are aimed high enough to be sure they'll go over the kids' heads and can be amusing to adults. Or that's more the Shrek the Shrek model, for
the Looney Tunes model, or the what was that cartoon, Tiny Toons.
You know, right, where the, you know, where the things that you just know won't harm the kids because they won't possibly get it, but they may be amusing to the parents. Right. And then there's another alternative, which is what I would think of kind of as the, I don't know, Goodnight Moon model, which is something that is just so beautiful that adults will respond to it, mm-hmm. even though it's completely pitched
to children. Well, I think what you're getting at, which is something I was going to mention, is there has to be an element of spectacle when you're working with or putting children in the audience. I was working with an artist who just believed that and kind of helped me to realize that's so much a part of what we do. Kids are emotional. They're not intellectual. They're not coming to your play with a lot of ideas about the world. I mean, they have their ideas, don't get me wrong, but they're not processing them in an intellectual way,
right?
As yet, maybe. And so a lot of the plays that we end up doing have a certain level of, I guess, you know, melodrama or just they're richer in an emotional way, mm-hmm. and a way to exploit that is through spectacle. And so, I mean, I'm not talking always about, you know, oversized, you know, puppets and, you know, big luxurious costumes. I mean, you can do it in very creative ways, as Andrew and Tire Swing do with, you know, manipulating actors to do really creative things with their bodies. Mm-hmm. But it's a way of presenting the material that really opens their imaginations and their eyes to something new. And I think as a producer of family theater, I mean, that's something we always have to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. See, I think I just have not grown up myself, because everything you're saying, I think, applies to adults too. I mean, I think adults are going to sit 2.5 hours in the theater, and you have to stimulate them visually sometimes during that.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
I always, the line between children and adults when it comes to what they like, to me, just seems to be fainter and fainter the older I get and the more I work in this business. And of course, you know, your style might be different, whether right. it's a child or an adult you're appealing to. Your way of stimulating them visually might be different, but I just think it's the same thing. You want to throw in, there has to be some humor if it's serious, there has to be some heart if it's comedic, there has to be some visual stimulation if there's a lot of talking. Maybe I just think I'm still 8 years old inside. So even though I'm an adult, when I see theater, I want to be stimulated in all those ways.
I think the perception of children's theater, that it doesn't tackle any major issues that adults face, but that's not true. We've been very successful in introducing death as a concept in our shows and yeah. introducing some very complex issues, relationships, your relationship to your mother, to your father, to your grandmother, to your neighbor, to your brother, to your sister. These are all really important and things that adults struggle with on a daily basis. And we're providing some light and some information as to for these children, how do you go about living your life? What are you supposed to do? That's why they're moralities, you know, they're morality tales. It's for a good reason. I think a lot of people should open up and allow themselves, even if you're just adults, to come and see these shows, which tackle some really major issues.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And I think, you know, when Andrew, you said, you know, adults, they sit back and you feel like you're having a hard time reaching them. I think that's the interesting thing that I notice, is that somewhere along, you know, and not everybody, you know, Francis, can hold on to that 8-year-old inside of us, you know, and somewhere along the line, a lot of people, you know, they shut down, or that sense of wonder gets buried under a lot of other things that, you know, life, under all life's complexities. So I think we all kind of take it upon ourselves to reawaken that in people, because it is still there. It's just a matter of, as you said, opening yourself up to it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that we're sometimes we have a harder job because we have to not only entice the children and make sure they're having a good time, but also try to have make the adults have a good time too. And so there is that sense of a layered effect.
Well, how do you do that? Which are you in the Shrek camp or the?
I mean, I like to think of it like Shakespeare. You know, he had to write for different classes, and I've got to write for different ages. So, you know, they're, you know, maybe for the really younger viewers, we're going to employ some more spectacle things, you know, more chasing, more running around, more falling down. You know, maybe for the middle of the road, you know, you're 8 to 14, you might just do real bold emotional colors. And then with adults, yeah, you have to throw in that extra layer of humor. Because we are adapting some older folk tales from different cultures around the world, I do find myself employing, you know, the humor of Mel Brooks or the humor of Mel Blanc or, you know, throwing little things, you know, even as much as having a character, you know, repeat that famous line from The Warriors. I mean, it's just, it's little things all over the place. Mm-hmm. And you throw them in and you make a reference and I think it's hysterical, and I'm hoping that my audience will too. So a lot of it does go to, you know, well, what do I enjoy? What do I think is funny?
I agree with that 100%. I am my audience member inside is my best guide of what is going to work and what isn't. And I'm lucky because Lifeline is an ensemble of artists. And so I do have a committee of 15 people who are going to come in and watch my run-throughs and listen to my read-throughs and read every draft and give me their opinion from what their internal audience says. So it's like a little market research company on the material. But
however, there are no children, I notice, in your ensemble. So your market research is a little skewed before you open, right?
Well, it would be, except that I do think, like you were saying, Tom, that everybody was once a child. Every adult was once a child. And there may be some people who have shut down to that. I agree with you. But most artists, I think, have had to keep that alive. So the artists in our company, I think, are all very in touch with that. And I know I'm in touch with my inner 8-year-old. Mm-hmm. And if my 8-year-old thinks it's funny, it's funny. and you know, we're all multifaceted people. So my adult wants to be stimulated too inside. I mean, I don't mean to be metaphysical about it, but I agree that I can listen to criticism and feedback. I can use my intellect. I can do all of that. But when I'm sitting in the dark theater and trying to assess the work, really my own opinion is my best guide. And when I trust that, I always have success.
Our artistic director, Tammy Henry, has 3 daughters. And they do come to rehearsals and they do often lend their analysis, which is definitely helpful when you're creating a show. But at the end of the day, when you're a theater professional, you're relying on your own training as a theater person, not just because you want to do children's shows or, you know, children's. This is theater. And so it's all back to the basics that everybody learned if you did go to college to learn acting or theater. You know, you rely on those same principles as you would for adult theater. It's no difference.
Have you ever been very surprised by a children's audience's reaction to something that you did?
Absolutely. I was actually going to mention this earlier, but we've had a couple of shows where we've done them in really big spaces, and we've had kids who run all the way up and hang out with their arms up on the apron of the stage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it happens. We did a choose your own adventure play, which was a lot of fun. So we had 3 different parts. You had the actors waiting backstage wondering which which way that the audience is going to choose. And so we had to rehearse a lot harder because we didn't know which scene we were going to be doing that day. And that was another way of engaging the children in. If you do children's theater in a flat, like a dance studio type of space, where there is no real clear separation of where the acting is and where the audience is, a number of times have kids run up on stage, and especially if you have animal characters, they want to go up and pet you and all kinds of stuff. It happens, and it's amazing. It's a lot of fun. It makes you appreciate live work so much that you have that element, that risk.
Right.
That's right. And I think that all of your surprises are positive, which I love. And I can't think of any of my surprises that aren't positive. Mm-hmm. The first one that came to mind is a show I adapted from a book with composer George Howe called Somebody Loves You, Mr. Hatch. And our ensemble member, James E. Grote, was playing Mr. Hatch. And he had this song in the beginning where he's this unloved man and he's singing, "Won't Somebody Love Me?" And we had a school group of younger children. We were like, oh, boy, these kids are really young. I hope they can handle this. They're kindergarten, you know. And when he was singing it, they started standing up and shouting, "Me, I love you, I love you." He was absolutely in tears by the end of the number. He could barely keep going. That was a really wonderful surprise.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah, I last year wrote and directed a show with a local blues singer named Catherine Davis. And I don't know if this makes me an optimist or a pessimist, but I guess I wrote it hoping that the audience response would be a certain way, but I truly was surprised when it actually was. Mm-hmm. It sort of revolved around a talent show and her journey from, you know, and living in Cabrini Green. And by the time we got to the talent show and her sort of coming out as this, you know, spectacular voice and, you know, understanding that her career in music was already paved by the time she was 12 years old, all 300 kids were screaming, you know, when she came out. And it made me realize that your audience, especially this audience, really does want you to succeed. Mm-hmm. They really do. They aren't cynical. They aren't, you know, despite the fact that, as I said earlier, you know, they might be coming in and not really wanting to be there. They do, once you start engaging them, they do really want to be there. They do really want you to succeed. So that was a nice surprise.
They don't sit back with their arms folded and say, okay, let's see if you're any good here.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
Well, now, Tom, I know that you mentioned your theater is connected with what sounds like a kind of a social service agency. Does the work you do have any, you know, social issues aspect to it?
Oh, always, always. But I don't think that we go out and specifically seek that out. I think the plays that we choose just invariably have those elements. You know, we were talking about earlier relationships, your role in the community. I think we want to see, I think it's really important. We look for shows where the protagonists are young protagonists because we want the audience to relate. And it's important to me that those young protagonists are making positive choices so that the people in the audience, no matter what their social or economic background is, they can recognize if they relate to that character, which mm-hmm. we hope they do, they can recognize that making a positive choice makes a difference. That cynical point of view, that can be broken through, that we can get to something more positive and instill in them the idea that they are a member of their communities and they can truly make a difference. But I think most plays kind of inherently infuse those ideas into the work.
Well, although I personally, at least in the adult theater, I'm a big resister of didactic theater. I mean, if I feel like I'm being lectured to about an issue, as opposed to treated to a very layered and, you know, sort of multi-viewed treatment of it, I get very resentful. And I would imagine it could be quite a trap in children's theater that you would kind of go down that road of wanting to teach a good lesson or something. And maybe that's fine. I don't know. What's your reaction to that?
I know we all have a reaction to that. I think we're all very conscious of that. And I personally, a red flag goes up for me when I read a script and I start to feel that from the playwright. Mm-hmm. It's not in my interest to teach anybody a lesson. I think we pride ourselves on the work that we do, that we're not doing that, that we're, as Francis said, respecting the intelligence of our audience, that they have minds to make up. So it's a matter of putting choices out there. Again, it's about choice. Mm-hmm. And
evoking thoughts and questions instead of being didactic about sending a message, a concrete message.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Andrew?
I agree. I think it's in the, you know, it really goes to the choice of the play. And what are the issues that are dealing with that play? The characters can be various, and it's interesting how different age groups will respond to different protagonists or antagonists. We're doing one of the pieces in the show that we're doing downtown, the Jataka Tales, deals with a character who cuts off the tusks of an elephant and then ends up killing the elephant. And the elephant, who is Buddha reincarnated, gives up these tusks and gives up his life for this human who is only using the tusks to for greed. We put it on for the kids. This is the choice that, like you said, this is a choice that this guy made. This is a choice that this elephant made. This is a choice that Buddha made. Mm-hmm. And it's up to you to draw out what's important. And it ends up that human character gets stomped to death by some other elephants. So that works out really good. This is heartwarming children's material here. I mean, when you look back, I mean, the
Grimm... Did you say that sarcastically? What was your tone there? I didn't get it.
I just think that children's theater, a lot of the plays have some really... There's some big stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And when you say don't pander... Right. And when you say don't talk down, you say don't teach a lesson, it means you have to put all that stuff out because that stuff is in life. It's real.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it goes back to what you said before about you can't, you know, you can't bull kids. You can't,
right.
You know, you can't pull it over. They're very, very smart. And I think one of the most rewarding things for me and when we do a show is to hear from parents after, you know, a few days after, a week after, and them tell me, wow, you know, my kid made me talk about this, or my kid started saying this and asked me questions about this, and I had to talk about it. And that, for me, is what we do.
I mean, that does sound like pretty strong stuff for kids, which myself, I think I am all for, depending on the treatment of it. I think we have such a tendency in this culture to whitewash everything for kids and bowdlerize. And
I think the media is, in general, pretty cavalier about violence, mm-hmm. about death. I mean, you look at the news, you look at popular movies. I think what we really have an opportunity to do and really try and take advantage of is as Andrew said, is talk about these things more deeply and show them in ways that expose young people to these ideas and to the ramification of these ideas in ways that they're not going to experience watching television. They're not going to experience watching movies or playing video games. We did a show last year called And Then They Came For Me, Remembering the World of Anne Frank. And it while Anne Frank was a character in the story, it really revolved around two survivors of the Holocaust who knew Anne Frank. And I mean, this was some very dark stuff for young people, but their response to it was so positive that the question and answer sessions that followed the shows were so rich because we took them seriously and then they took us mm-hmm. seriously, and I think as long as kids feel like they're respected in that way, then you're going to have an honest dialogue with them.
Yeah, I think children can be much more serious-minded than we often give them credit for.
It's true. And about being didactic, it's funny because I find our age group that we are always speaking to, I find those children extraordinarily didactic. They've been taught all the rules, mm-hmm. so they know people are good or bad. They see things very, very black and white. And one of my delights is disrupting that a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I do it when I teach in our outreach program in the public schools, and I love it when our shows do it. Our current show is The Stinky Cheese Man and Other Fairly Stupid Tales. And, you know, stupid is a bad word. Kids aren't allowed to use that word anymore. And that show uses it all over the place. And uh-huh. it's a series of fairy tales that have been turned upside down. So, you know, the person who is righteous and good in the fairy tale in the play might be annoying and might get a comeuppance, you know, and the person who isn't, you know, doesn't share and isn't nice, you know, might be the one that you're actually attracted to. And I think it's just great to disrupt that and have them think about it. Oh, it doesn't have to be black and white. There are all kinds of other options in the middle. And I think for that age group, that's an especially important thing to do.
I really enjoy employing characters that you find in life, and I think, you know, our brand of theater, we decide to do a different culture for every show. And, you know, the makeup of that culture, wherever that might hail from, there are people that are in that culture who are not necessarily good people. And I always find it rewarding to put these characters in the play. And so, you know, you have an opportunity to see these characters, and because when you put something on the stage, when you take it out of life and you put it up there, it really, what truly the essence of that person, that character, really shines, and you're not masked, you know? So mm-hmm. if you have a shopkeeper who obviously, you know, is very trying to get you to buy something, and you start to see the greed in that person's eyes, you can't see it in life as much. But when you put them on the stage, mm-hmm. it's very clear for everybody what that person is all about. And I really like doing that. I like doing that in my works. Because it allows kids to see through these mm-hmm. people that maybe they didn't see it in regular life, but now that they've seen it in the theater, and they can put two and two together when they leave.
Well, we're pretty much out of time. We heard about Stinky Cheese Man at Lifeline, and Andrew mentioned, what is it, the name of it?
The Jataka Tales, which is at the Cultural Center.
And Tom, what is your show right now?
We're about to open The Shakespeare Stealer, which is adapted from the book by Gary Blackwood. He did his own adaptation, and we open on November 4th.
Great. Well, thank you three so much for joining us. Really appreciated it.
Thank you.
Thank you.